Chair, ladies and gentlemen, members, it's indeed a pleasure to be here. It's a very timely subject, it's a very hotly debated subject, and as a representative of my DG, very pleased and honored to be here to try to shed a little bit of light on the Commission perspective. What I would like to do in the time that's been made available to me is briefly to cover what is the background to our plan, why we negotiated this agreement, what does the agreement actually do, and perhaps very importantly also, what does the agreement not do. If I can start with the first topic, what does the agreement do? So why should we be concerned about ID? I think for probably many in the room, it's very obvious, but given the recent storm and some of the criticism, I think it may be useful to recall that there are many compelling reasons for protecting intellectual property. First, progress will be in the human race, has always depended on its ability to create and innovate. Second, the realization that society, by offering equal protection for new creations, can spur innovators on to further technological progress and artists to create new forms of artistic expression. And thirdly, it protects firms' reputation and also creates an incentive for companies to invest in maintaining and improving the quality of their products, and at the same time helps consumers identify where products originate from. The EU and many of the industrialized countries see knowledge-based and creative industries as their probably remaining area of comparative advantage, as us middle-income countries enjoy lower labor costs, energy costs, and raw material costs. In other words, our competitive edge and our ability to spur economic growth, create new jobs, and maintain existing ones therefore depends on our capacity to innovate, especially in high-margin, knowledge-intensive industries. We have therefore over the years in the EU and member states built up an advanced framework for protection of intellectual property and rules for dealing with theft of IP. Such a framework is of little value if it's not accompanied by rules that enable their effective enforcement. The EU, and I respond to one of the points the chair made in the beginning, the EU and a number of the other industrialized countries and other countries who have an interest in enforcement have, for I think about the last 10 years, been trying to launch a debate on enforcement within both the WTO and within WIPO. But we have been blocked. It's not even been possible to put an agenda point to discuss enforcement in these bodies. And consequently, about 3 years ago, the countries that were being frustrated with not even an ability to discuss the topics decided to pursue these discussions outside of the WTO and WIPO. Just a brief word on counterfeiting and piracy, because again, it has been discussed a lot, but I think it's again useful briefly to recall what is it all about. Counterfeiting and piracy represents a growing problem, not just in the EU. It threatens the well-being of our businesses and creative industries, but increasingly also the well-being of our citizens. In the last 10 years, from 2005 to 2010, the national customs authorities of the member states have registered a tripling in the number of counterfeit goods seized at the EU borders. A tripling. In 2010, the World Customs Organization also reported a marked increase over the previous years in the number of seizures concerning items such as computer accessories, electronic appliances, and goods related to sport. I think we, and that's also been apparent, I think in some of the debates, still tend to associate counterfeiting principally with luxury goods, fashion, music, and films. And it's true that it's still a bulk of the problem, but even more worrying is the increasing trend that counterfeiters or pirates are moving into areas of mass consumption goods such as foodstuffs, cosmetics, hygiene products, spare parts for cars, toys, and various types of technical and electronic equipment. To take just one example, if you look at trade in fake medicines, it is estimated that global trade in fake medicines accounts for about 10% of the medicines that are out there. And that in the developing countries are counterfeit products. So what does ACTA do? The Commission and the Council, when it endorsed this, believe that ACTA is a positive and balanced agreement. It is positive because it helps our export businesses of all sides to protect their intellectual property from violations, especially in arts, culture, agriculture, industry, and science sectors, and therefore to be able to maintain their competitiveness and the jobs and a critical time for the European economy. It is balanced because it respects the rights of citizens and the concerns of important stakeholders. I will come back to that in a moment. What I want to really try to emphasize, because I think this is one of the points that in much of the debates we have apparently not communicated well enough, and it seems widely misunderstood, ACTA is about improving enforcement of intellectual property. It does not change the procedures that define what an intellectual property right is. So what are these rules we're talking about? It's rules about civil courts, when can courts issue injunctions, what kind of indemnity available, what can customs officials do and not do, who do they inform, etc., etc. Its intention, and that's also highlighted in the agreement, is to combat IP theft on a large scale. It doesn't mandate anybody to adopt measures relating to small-scale infringement, and it, for example, explicitly allows for the exclusion of small quantities of good and non-commercial nature contained in travelers' personal luggage from border measures. This is, again, one of the very frequent examples that have been cited. And as I repeat again, it doesn't touch on the underlying rights that are afforded to right holders in the EU. In fact, the Commission's negotiating mandate, and by the way, this is an agreement that unusually was negotiated both by the Commission and the Member States because it's a mixed agreement. So the criminal enforcement provisions was in fact negotiated by the Council Presidency, and that also meant that Member States were in represented at all the negotiating sessions, because that part of the agreement was not negotiated by the Commission, but by the Presidency. So I said it doesn't have to touch the underlying rights, it's about the tools that are available to right holders. And I just want to briefly run through, because again, this I think is very clearly missing from the debate. These rights, and some of these that have been criticized, are not found in ACTA, but they're found in existing community law. Found in the Enforcement Directive from 2004. It's found in the IP Customs Regulation from 2003, in the Copyright Directive from 2001, the E-Commerce Directive from 2000, and the Data Protection Directives. None of these directives will be changed by So the bottom line is, in fact, what is legal today will remain legal once ACTA is adopted. What is legal today will remain legal after it has been adopted. What's the state of play? ACTA was concluded, negotiation ended mid-November. It was made public, the final version was made public 6 December, and 2 weeks ago the European Union signed in Tokyo together with 22 member states. We have 5 member states that have not signed, and then various member states that are in various stages of their ratification processes. If I could just briefly then respond to the criticism, I'm not going to walk because I don't want to monopolize the time. First on transparency, this has been a very frequent criticism. The Commission fully understands the importance of transparency. There's one factor that I think also needs to be taken account of. The Commission cannot alone decide on the transparency of negotiations. When you are sitting down in foreign countries, it has to be something that is agreed by all the parties around the table. But that being said, can I first turn to, because we've been criticized for not being transparent vis-à-vis the European Parliament. The Parliament has received everything in terms of information, and be very specific, so here I'm not going to mess with the generalities, that is foreseen by the Lisbon Agreement and the Framework Agreement that has been concluded by the Commission and the European Parliament. So what does that mean? That means the Commission has shared 24 negotiating documents with the European Parliament, 7 different draft versions of free expression, fair process, and privacy. It protects privacy law. For example, it stated that ACTA requires no party to disclose information contrary to the law protecting privacy rights. So what I think we could go into further detail, but there are several caveats specifically included in the agreement because the Commission and the negotiators knew that this was an important topic, and we had also, as I said, a very clear mandate from the Council not to go beyond existing EU legislation in this agreement. ACTA is another issue that has been mentioned many times, does not prevent people from sharing content online. It's a tool to fight piracy. Piracy, on the other hand, should not be confused with sharing content. Sharing content is only legal if the content is legal, and if it's illegal, sharing it is illegal. But that has nothing to do with ACTA. That's the law today, and will be the law after ACTA has been passed. So ACTA doesn't define what is legal or illegal. It only provides a tool if it's determined illegal. What can you do? What are the rights you have? Access to medicines. Again, an important subject and something the Commission spent quite a bit of energy in the negotiation ensuring that this was properly accounted for in the agreement. And there are several safeguards in the agreement. First of all, Article 1 of the agreement says nothing in the agreement should derogate from the obligations of any party under the TRIPS agreement. And the TRIPS agreement has, as you know, a Doha declaration in paragraph 6, and there's a modification ongoing. So whatever, in fact, we decided, even if we had written it something in, it would be overruled by TRIPS. But there's nothing in there on top of that the US Council TRIPS or the obligations set out in paragraph 6 system under TRIPS. And there's no provisions otherwise that could directly or indirectly affect. But we go further than that. It contains reference to the Doha Declaration on Public Health and Article 7 and 8 of the TRIPS Agreement, which contain safeguards as regards public health. It also excludes patents from criminal and border measures. Again, this was a concern of those who were very worried about whether this would have an unintended impact on the circulation of particularly generic medicines. It leaves it optional for each party to whether they will include it in civil enforcement measures, and the reason is that in fact civil enforcement measures already foresees possibility of border checks in the EU, again, so that's pre-ACTA and doesn't change with ACTA. Finally, on internet, despite persistent rumors, there are no provisions in the agreement, and those who criticize that I've still not seen anybody referring to any specific provision in the agreement. For takedown notices or the so-called three strikes rule, in which when internet service providers have to cut off service. So there is no such rule, and there will be no such rules introduced as a result of that. There is no language in ACTA that would apply signatories to apply such sanctions or to monitor activities of users on the internet. In fact, monitoring, systematic monitoring, is already outlawed in the EU as a result of the e-commerce directive. So we would not be in a position to make such a commitment, and we have not made such a commitment in ACTA. That is clearly spelled out in the e-commerce directive. Then there's also been very much debate about the idea of cooperating, encouraging cooperation between right holders and the internet service providers. That already exists in the European law. There's a provision in the e-commerce directive. There is a memorandum of understanding if anybody is interested in seeing what these kind of cooperation would do. We have also available one of these memorandums of understanding available on our website. There's nothing in there, and on top of it, it's spelled out explicitly in ACTA that it can only be done in full respect of privacy rights and other rights that are afforded to citizens in the EU. I hope that. So, thank you first of all for the opportunity to respond. I'm happy to participate in the debate that comes. If I conclude just by making one brief remark, I think underlying this important debate is a question about what rules should apply to the internet. And that is very much a very important debate, but it has nothing to do with ACTA as it's been negotiated or the concept of ACTA. It's a basic choice. Do we believe the internet should be a safe haven where everything is possible and where the law does not apply, where activities that are freedom of expression, rights to privacy, and obligations to respect the laws that apply to society in general. It's an important debate, but I stress again, it is not one that is affected by ACTA as it has been negotiated. So I'd like to conclude with that, and thank you very much for the opportunity. I'm very happy to respond to later on.